All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, October 11th. I am Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are going to talk a little bit about the week that was for the NFL in Week 5 and start to look ahead for Week 6. Real quick before we get started, James, yesterday I called you because I needed you to do something with a baseball system, and you said you could not because you were at, quote, a spooky funhouse with your kids. Man. On a scale of 1 to spooky, how spooky would you say this thing was, and was it worth it compared to actually keeping the lifeblood of our business alive?
Well, it was, first of all, not a spooky funhouse. It was a spooky farm getting ready for their hayride. Second of all, turns out they weren't even ready for us to really walk through the spookiest part yet. It's not totally set up. So we did have a nice day of buying apples from their farm stand, playing on their crappy playground equipment, and kind of peering at the spooky stuff through the woods. So all in all, 9.5 out of 10 in terms of how I wanted to spend my Monday day off.
And but, Lord knows your family loves to do apple-related things. This is now a few apple-related things.
I've heard you guys. Apple Harvest Fest, yeah.
Apple Fest instead of football.
Apples are big here in New England.
Spooky farm and spooky
apple
farm.
Fest was on a Saturday. You don't know anything.
DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is our site, DFSR.com for short. You can head over there and grab pretty much all the free content that you need to get yourself started or continue winning in FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA coming really soon down the pike, NHL starting this week. It's free for a couple days, and then $29.95 a month after that for our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which will help you calculate optimal lineups for NBA and NFL, baseline projections for NHL, and you're all set to go also at Major League Baseball while time lasts. And let's talk a little bit about last week. I think the first thing we can start with, and it doesn't really come as a surprise necessarily, but I think we can label Tom Brady fully back, and not like I don't think there was much question about what he would be able to do as he stepped back in, although I guess I held a little bit of reservation just because he hadn't played in so long. That is wiped off the table within, I would say, the first drive of the game, where it was pretty clear that he was full systems go, and so were the Patriots. What were your thoughts on that Brady performance?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much what we expected, right? We were looking at that and saying that he was going to be one of the top plays of the week. You know, we wound up going in a different direction for cash games and a better direction on a points per dollar basis with Brian Hoyer. But yeah, Brady was elite. I mean, top overall scoring quarterback of the week. Looked totally in sync with Gronkowski when they were on the field together. You know, some other names pop into the top of the list. Chris Hogan and Martellus Bennett both having big games. I thought it was odd that Edelman didn't put up a better performance given how well the rest of the team did, but kind of strikes me as a little bit of a variance bug. He did get the most targets on the team with 10. So yeah, I think Patriots are back to the old Patriots, and there's, frankly, the only weird thing here is Bennett getting all the touchdowns. That's the thing that's going to make it tricky to project the receiving core from going forward. But yeah, Brady is all systems go.
Yeah, I think that with Edelman, I think if you play that game out 100 times, this is the low part of the target ratio that he gets just in a bunch of different variations of the same game. Like he was running his routes. He had some looks, and it just didn't totally crystallize, mostly because they found matchups in other places. I think that, though, the one issue we might have with the Patriots going forward is they could just have more weapons than they've had in the past. Like Brady's always been able to just sort of make lemonade out of lemons, depending on and some of the auxiliary pieces that he has. But now, and honestly, Chris Hogan might be that also, but if they have just another receiving tight end that he's comfortable going to, plus Gronk, plus guys like Hogan in there, and then Edelman, and then James White out of the backfield, and they're able to run a little bit with Blunt, I don't know. Maybe it's just that maybe just the targets aren't going to be there because he doesn't need to just force feed him the ball as much anymore.
Right. I mean, it's also worth noting that the Patriots were simply crushing the Browns in this game. So I think you saw a lot of names pop up that you're not going to see in games that are a little bit closer. Like, you know, James White and DJ Foster had 11 carries combined. We saw that earlier in the season that they were pleased to just put Blunt out there and continue grinding it down in close games. So I think we saw a lot of opportunity to get spread around to guys like Hogan. And again, more James White than probably we're going to see going forward. Kind of odd that Danny Amendola didn't get more involved, given that Brady had liked him in the past. But I suspect that Danny Amendola will out-target Chris Hogan going forward. So like, I don't think you need to pick up Hogan in your season-long league or anything like that. I think all in all, the real question is going to be, you know, what's the deal in the red zone? Because if Martellus Bennett is really going to get the lion's share of the red zone targets and out-target Gronk overall, that's going to be a big point of curiosity for me.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that Amendola thing. I mean, Hogan out-snapped him 49-21. Amendola just might not be part of their plan as much going forward. Like, I'm not like a game tape guy, so I don't want to totally pretend like I know this. This is something we'll look into just in terms of their skill sets, but that snap difference is pretty stark for those two guys. So I'm not sure we see a resurgence there. But again, I don't think Chris Hogan's a, you know, four catch for 100 yards every single game. I think that's definitely clearly run hot, but I'm not sure we see Amendola just jump back into the limelight either.
I think you're going to see a lot of guys, you know, that wouldn't have normally gotten so many snaps get more snaps in a blowout. But, you know, I could be wrong on that for sure.
Right, and we could see more of this blowout thing creep up for the – I mean, they're -8.5 going into this week against the Bengals, who look terrible against the Cowboys. So I'm not totally sure it ever crystallizes for us. The New England could just be favorites to blow most teams out going forward. So they're an interesting team, great for fantasy purposes, and it's going to be something that we're going to be talking about definitely even just going into this week. The Vikings also solidify themselves as just an elite team at this point. They – roll over the Texans 31-13, really getting production from every facet of the game, well, kind of except for the run game with McKinnon, but they're able to score a touchdown on defense. Really just Houston can't get anything going with them at all. They also are another team that sort of spread the ball around to some guys that maybe weren't as high on lists just because Diggs was out. What did you think about the Vikings' performance?
Well, I thought there were a couple of big takeaways here. The first one is Adam Thielen, obviously a terrific performance. Only the 8 targets, and of course he converted 7 of those to insane amounts of yards and touchdowns and so on. So great performance, nothing bad to say about it, especially if you got him on the super cheap prices that you could afford him on. He'll definitely be one to watch, you know, depending if he stays cheap, then he could slot into that kind of punt receiver role, given the lack of a lot of other good punt options going forward. And then the second big one I thought was the way they deployed their running backs in this game. And it also kind of cast a light for me more on the punt running back scene overall. And I was hoping to dive into that if you think we have time.
Yeah, I guess what you're referring to is how McKinnon and Asiata they didn't really necessarily split carries, but McKinnon was the guy, and I'm going to let you go into that point in a second. McKinnon was the guy early in the game and actually wasn't looking so bad in the first drive or two. And then it just kind of all ground to a halt for him. Whereas Asiata sort of ran the other way and got a lot of the carries down the stretch and the goal line carries as well, which we already knew about going in. McKinnon, they did hand him the ball a couple times within the red zone, within like the 5-yard line, and he just couldn't get it done. And then at that point, when they get down and close, it's all Asiata. But what did you want to say about the running back by committee that we're looking at? Just sort of like, I'm assuming you're talking about like writ large NFL.
Yeah, well, and I'll start with the McKinnon and Asiata situation. I think is the most relevant to my mind because we, you know, recommended McKinnon as a play for this week, given how cheap he was. Yeah, so McKinnon gets out there, 7 carries for 32 yards on the opening drive, to your point. And then after that, he had 13 carries for 4 yards.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
That is so bad. And at some point, I mean, McKinnon does have a track record of kind of getting stuffed at the line too. So, you know, Asiata has never been great shakes when he's filled in for Peterson in the past. But given that I would say he's the definitive goal line back, you know, yeah, they've given McKinnon some shots at it. But by and large, when you get down here, you expect them to see them call Asiata's number. I'm not sure we can continue to put McKinnon in there. I mean, yeah, he out-touched Asiata, obviously, in this game. But in a game where they're going to win by this many points and he's going to put up such a terrible fantasy total with Asiata, supposedly only the goal line guy, getting 14 touches, I think it's McKinnon's now in full wait-and-see mode for me. Like, until he really gets it together, I'm not going to be playing the guy.
Yeah, they're off this week, so we'll have a week to sort of figure that out just in terms of where we go with that situation. This is the situation for a lot of teams, and it seemed like Minnesota was going to control the ball enough, and honestly, they did. We were just almost dead on with his touches this week. He just didn't get anything. Right. He just didn't get anything going. He was pretty chalky on DraftKings considering the price, that 4,000 price. So I'm not just totally crushing. It's not a crushing situation to have it happen. Like, these things just do happen. It really more speaks to, again, what we've sort of been a theme this whole year is there are just very few running backs at this point that are their team's just guy, right? Like, they don't. There's the list is really, really short. I mean, it's like at this point, and some of it's just totally injury related. Like, you know, Jordan Howard kind of falls into this category as like, and he's been creeping up. Melvin Gordon is still there. Ezekiel Elliott. And there's a few more. But
yeah, I mean, I think there's, so, you know, I was looking at this pretty carefully in prep for today. I think there's more like half the teams have a definitive number one running back. Now, in a lot of cases, that's a guy who was a backup to the first definitive guy, like Jordan Howard or something. Right. But more interesting, I think, is, you know, in trying to break down, because you only need to play a couple running backs each week, right? And the problem we run into is, so you can play a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, who continues to get elite touches, you know, the red zone guy and so on. But oftentimes he's just not the best value, you know, especially given that there are so few, relatively speaking, because I think we would agree that there's probably more good wide receiver ones, for instance, than there are good running back ones. So given that you can only play a couple of these guys from week to week, or that you only need to play a couple of guys from week to week, it doesn't wind up feeling that scarce, I think, when you actually start putting names down on paper and submitting your lineups. And that being said, the punts this year, I think that's more the direction I was thinking. Like, the punts this year have kind of just been terrible, right? Like, what happened to the days of old when we could slide a guy in for 5,000 and he would just be amazing? Like, this is not, it's not been that way this season. So like the other team, of course, a big play this weekend was DeAndre Washington. And I would say that he was a pretty huge disappointment to anyone who played him too, even on a baseline salary.
And we did, and we had long discussions about the situation leading in from like the 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock hour on Sunday,
yeah,
when it was clear that Murray was going to be out. And at first we had Washington sort of as that de facto RB1 kind of guy coming out of Oakland, and then more news comes out that they were going to split carries, and we got worried and kind of juggled around his projection. There was no other player whose projection we juggled around and looked at more than DeAndre Washington going into Sunday.
Right.
And we ultimately fell on the idea that he was going to get first crack at it. And if anyone in that range had a chance to hit like 16 touches in a game, then it was him. It didn't totally materialize that way. They did really split it down the middle pretty evenly. Oakland chose to just throw the ball a ton, which they found their matchup that they wanted with Cooper. So it really is unsafe. It was funny, too, because we were hemming and hawing, and this is nothing we could do about this, that we were just dying to have Jacquizz Rodgers on the main slate, because that was a guy that we saw as, okay, this is going to be an every down back kind of guy. There's no question, at least for this game, about what his role is going to be. And that did materialize in the way that we wanted it to. It's just he wasn't available for the Sunday main slate, but for the Thursday through Sunday or the Sunday to Monday late ones, that was a guy that crept up into the, this is just the kind of guy we're looking for in a situation. And you're right, they just haven't, those guys have been pretty few and far between this year.
Yeah, for sure. But I think on Washington, you know, one thing that's good to keep into perspective is what exactly it means to score 7.7 fantasy points on a 4,500 salary. Like, that's really not that bad, all things considered. Like a 1.7 multiplier, that'd be like if Antonio Brown went out last week and scored about 17 fantasy points. Like, you wouldn't look at that and be like, oh, this guy killed me. But just because the number is so low, it just feels much worse. So, yeah, Washington didn't kill you. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind going forward, is that oftentimes, and if you consider that probably to be his floor, right? I mean, he did wind up with, let's see here, yeah, 14 touches. Like, if he's going to get 14 touches, probably 7.7 points is about as bad as he's going to be able to do, given five of those were receptions. So,
yeah, they run into that. Oakland runs into that situation where they have Rashard, and they're splitting him down. And then they gave it to, you know, I can't remember who the guy's name off the top of my head. They gave it to someone else. Remember, we were like kind of going back and forth, like, who's going to get the goal line carries? Who's going to get the goal line carries?
I knew it was going to be Jamize Olawale.
Called it, dude.
I don't know if you you didn't know that. I thought I mentioned that.
that's true. I should go back and
listen. I really should have if I didn't, so that's my bad.
I should go back and listen to the tape. But I think that's the situation.
Well, it's worth noting that he got six carries, too.
Right.
So that's like a... like a dirty, dirty committee. If they're going to go three guys, sub 10 touches, that's really sick. All of them featured in the passing game too. It's wild.
And you mentioned about the points per dollar that we were getting off Washington. We had him in our FanDuel optimal lineups for that main slate, and those were able to cash because that price didn't kill you in the end, right? If you hit on enough other plays, like we had Brown and Marshall, Le'Veon Bell and Hoyer, enough of those other guys will make up. Other guys at higher price points that can make up the difference, and those don't kill you. But in general, you don't want to be running those guys like that out week after week, because it just is going to be – it's just a little too dicey. I think we want to look –
yeah, a 1.7 multiplier is not good.
No.
We should say that much right now, that if your whole team goes out there and scores 1.7 points per dollar, you've done a very bad job constructing your lineup. But it's much better – if you're going to take risks – I guess my overarching point here is if you're going to take risks, then – taking risks on a small salary is usually the way to do it, because you just don't wind up losing outright when that guy isn't good, the same way you will if you say you go contrarian at the big name wide receiver, right? Like, say you played Julio Jones this week. Julio Jones on that price and his performance against Denver, you just lose outright.
Right. Yep.
There's no bouncing back, and that doesn't happen at the up punt areas. But yeah, so I you know, the punt things, like the Giants running back situation, also a mess. You know, there's teams like Green Bay who are splitting carries almost up and down. So,
and Lacy, there's some injury concern about Lacy heading out of last week, which could present us an opportunity. We'll have to follow that along as the week goes on. But yeah, there's just a lot of uncertainty at the position. Like Atlanta,
it's just not cheap. And a lot of the guys who you would like to be cheaper, like Cameron Artis Payne or something, like these guys are still not so cheap to where you're going to fist pump jam them in no matter what. So yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, the Raiders are an interesting team too, because they've become one of these teams that's just happy to pass a ton. Like they threw 40 times as opposed to run 40 to 25 in terms of pass to run. And those teams, you know, if they're going to just be using their run game as the short passing game, because they also targeted Rashard and Washington had 11 receptions. And if you had Olawale, they had 12 receptions out of the backfield total. That's a ton. And yep. So if that's just going to be their game plan, is that our run game is going to be the short pass and our pass game is going to be the long pass. So you're looking at just at a situation that doesn't break down sort of along the same traditional lines as even some of these other teams, even in the new NFL. Like that's just a ton. That's a pretty stark pass to run comparison.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of passing to running backs. No question about it. But I mean, it, like the old school Patriots, you're not going to get, they would never get 25 carries, right? Like when they were doing the old short passes, your running game thing. So I don't know that Oakland is exactly analogous to that. I think for them, it's more the committee issue that breaks down their playability from my perspective. But yeah, the point still holds is that you're not going to get any playable guys out of this game. And that brings me to the next point, which is fantasyfactor.com. So Fantasy Factor is one of our new sponsors for this NFL season, and they're doing some interesting stuff over there and are different from a lot of big sites in a couple of fundamental ways that I'd love to share with you guys. So the first way that they're different is they're not huge. So, you know, you're playing on DraftKings and FanDuel, where sharks are putting in hundreds of lineups, and, you know, people in our chat are always saying, it's the same people always winning these big tournaments. Well, the thing about those guys is they're good, but they're also putting in hundreds of lineups. If you don't want to compete against people putting in that, you know, all these hundreds of lineups or thousands of entries in a given tournament are sharks with access to systems like ours, then head over to fantasyfactor.com. You can play smaller contests against, you know, players who are more casual typically, who have just found out and prefer the small site play, smaller buy-ins and so on. So that's one big, huge difference. And then the other big difference is the way they put their bonuses out. So when you deposit on fantasyfactor.com, the bonus that they give you goes right into your account. You can start playing with it right away. If you win, you can keep building up your bankroll. And if you lose, no sweat, it's on them. So that's fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR, and they'll get you started with those bonuses I mentioned. And yeah, we'll hope to see you over there.
The other thing, the final thing I think I had on my list, and I know you had a couple things to talk about, was we had talked about possibly just the demise, maybe that's too strong of a word, the downgrade, of Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers, our concern going into this week was that he, while the matchup seemed pretty nice and they had a decent implied Vegas total going in against the Giants at home, Rodgers has been clearly not the Aaron Rodgers of old in terms of especially the accuracy, and that played itself out again against the Giants. He was 23 of 45, so just a tick over 50% completion against, again, a Giants team that isn't phenomenal in the secondary. It's just a start. And that number that's a really just concerning number, I think, for guy like Rodgers, who, and it's so funny because I think there's a tendency to think, Jordy Nelson is clearly a guy. Then you're like, oh, he has Randall Cobb. I'm not sure Randall Cobb is even that good. He had a nice game this game with 11 targets and 108 yards. But then after that, you know, Devontae Adams. I wonder if these are guys who in the past, the old version of Rodgers was able to prop up and appear to be sort of good. And now that there's a decline on his end possibly, and maybe just a decline in these other guys, we're starting to see where the truth possibly is. What are your thoughts on Rodgers? Because I think there's reason for even Green Bay to be really concerned.
Yeah, I went into this last week, but Rodgers is just simply not the same guy he has been in the past. The thing we look at most, I think, when it comes to quarterbacks and projecting their safety going forward is their completion percentage, and especially comparing that to their historical baseline. So the old Rodgers, you know, in the high 60s, maybe even scraping up against 70% completion rate, you know, getting those passes in the hands of his receivers is going to be not only just more yards and touchdowns and all the stuff we like, but less of the stuff we don't like, primarily interceptions. And given that his completion percentage is really struggling this season, and again, we don't know if that's him or, you know, some combination of maybe a slightly banged up receiving core or what, but yeah, it's just not connecting right now. And one thing is for sure, which is that he's just not a guy you want to pay top dollar for, because it really hasn't even mattered what the matchup has been. It's, you know, something in the low 200s yards, maybe a mix of touchdowns and interceptions. We can't really be sure. You know, the offense just is struggling. So I don't know why you want to pay top dollar for a quarterback and an offense who's struggling to that degree.
And we're not going to have to really worry about it this week. He goes and plays Dallas, and that's just not a defense that we've been wanting to target at all to start the season, and that was solidified again this week. They're just a good team, and you just don't need – there's no reason to play, you know, in DFS purposes, no reason to really go out on a limb and play a guy against Dallas. But, yeah, Rodgers is a guy – it's going to be interesting when he gets – another sort of bad matchup going forward, or bad defense, a good, you know, good fantasy matchup, what we kind of do with a guy like that, because I just don't think you can consider him to be any realm of safe. What are some things that stood out to you this week that you were kind of looking back at week five?
Sure. So we've gotten into a bunch of them already, the running backs by committee, you know, the Pats and so on. But one of the things that I've been looking at very closely this season is tight end performance. So the tight ends this season have been really bad. I don't know if...
Was Kyle Rudolph a good play this week? Well.
What's that?
Was Kyle Rudolph a good play this week?
Yeah, he wasn't that great a play this week. We liked him, you know, compared to some of his peers, but it's not been really excellent. And I mean, so if you look at 2015, right? So 2015 had five of the top 30 receivers in the NFL in terms of both yards and catches were at tight end, right? So this season we have Greg Olsen is fourth overall in yards. So that's tremendous. You know, that's really, really good. And then after that, you don't see another receiver until you get down to Jordan Reed and Martellus Bennett at 26 and 27. And of course, Martellus Bennett now in a timeshare with Gronkowski. So, you know, it stands to reason. I mean, it didn't play out this way last week, but it stands to reason that those yards will probably drift down and maybe Gronk drifts up. So, you know, maybe that all comes out in the wash. But after that, you need to go past 40 and now you're down into the range of guys like Dennis Pitta or, you know, Jimmy Graham, rather, or Kyle Rudolph, our buddy, at 54. So it's a really, really tricky situation to project tight ends this year. And I'm not sure what we do about that just yet. Like, I'm tempted to want to play a guy like Greg Olsen, but you also have to pay up quite a bit. And, you know, at least on a yards per catch basis and things like that, you don't expect that he'll continue to put up performances like he did on Monday night. So I don't know. I kind of feel lost at tight end. It's been an area where the whole industry has struggled all season long. And I'm not sure who's going to rise to the top of that group, but it's just something I think it's worth keeping an eye on, because it used to be that you could just grab a tight end in kind of that 5,000 to 6,000 range on FanDuel in particular and do pretty well, or you could pay up for a true stud like Gronkowski. And we're in this middle ground this year where we don't really have true studs, and those bottom guys have been so inconsistent that there's no one to trust. So I don't know. How are you feeling about tight end?
Yeah, no, I'm in the same way. I'm tempted to always at this point just say go cheap and just sort of forget about it and just kind of hope for the best and hope you
go cheap and guess right.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, like, the, you know, we played Rudolph a lot last week, which I was totally fine with his target share going in plus the lack of digs, and it just seemed like, you know, the passes are going to go somewhere, and Rudolph had already been so highly targeted that why wouldn't it? Just didn't turn out to be the case, which, you know, whatever, it happens. But I think you do yourself a service at least at this point, if the volatility is so high on tight ends, that to just play, like, to make the same lineups and play Rudolph in one, Zach Miller in one, Charles Clay in one, you know, and just like all these guys that are sort of all in the same range. I mean, this is for last week. Who knows? I haven't really looked at lineups for coming up for this week, but that was sort of the case last week. All those guys were priced around the same. They all, you know, saw some targets in the passing game. None of them were totally elite, but you just reduce some of the variance on a tight end position that's just tough to predict by just having a little piece of all those guys and just hope that that's the matchup you got. You're going to be pushed a little bit with Olsen this week. They play the Saints, who's always just a team that you want to really just grab everyone from the passing game on. Cam comes back this week, I think. So, you know, a lot of Olsen's targets last night came from Derek
Anderson.
I'm not sure
if that's good or bad for Olsen.
That's what I mean. Like last night they were from Anderson. So who really knows? It's going to be really hard on FanDuel to pay $8,100 for a guy like Olsen.
That's what I mean. Like, because he's not Gronkowski of old, right? Like, he's not a guy who you can just be sure is going to get all the red zone looks or is sure going to put up 100 plus yards a game. And after that, but I mean, your alternatives are playing. So a guy actually, like, going forward is Zach Miller. You know, after one kind of poor week in week four, bounces back with seven catches last week and nearly 80 yards. that's, again, you're not dancing in the streets with a performance like that. It's hard to go too crazy. But, you know, at this point, he's converting every six targets into five receptions, which is excellent. They're playing a ball control game with Hoyer there. You know, Eddie Royal, for instance, his numbers are almost exactly the same as Miller's on a reception and targets basis. So looks kind of sustainable. And Miller does look to be one of the primary red zone targets. So, but for me, like, if he gets a bad matchup, there's really no one else I'm feeling good about in those mid 5,000s range at all. And it's just a mess. I don't know. There's no other way to say it. It's a kind of a crapshoot.
Miller and the Bears face Jacksonville this week, a much improved Jacksonville, at least pass defense so far. So still a guy I want to look at. His price has climbed a little bit in the short term. So he's not in that cheap 5,000 range, at least on FanDuel anymore. He's up almost close to six now. But yeah, I'm with you. Total, the tight ends is ugh.
And actually, on the subject of tight end, so Olsen leads the league in receiving yards last week with 181, but very strange list after him in terms of the receiving leaders. So after Olsen, you get T.Y. Hilton, 171 yards and a touch, a guy we've talked about quite a bit as the guy who just will do that from time to time. So not hugely surprising, but after that, we go Sammy Coates for 139, Amari Cooper at 138, and then Tevin Coleman at 132. I mean, this is one of those things like when ESPN puts out for the NCAA bracket where they're like, if you guess every single game correctly, you'll get $1 million. Like if anyone in the world had these top five guys as the top receivers for the week, that would be pretty surprising. So
it was interesting.
What do you make of that?
It was interesting with the Steelers. They ended up passing a lot more. The game stayed a little bit closer in the first half than I think most people thought it would, and which led to them, I mean, Roethlisberger, they were pretty huge favorites going in, like minus 10 or something like that, and Roethlisberger still almost threw 50 passes in the game. Part of that was because they shot themselves in the foot. They did like a fake field goal early on that didn't work out, so they had a down and close situation that they weren't able to score at all on, and Coates ended up dropping a touchdown at one point, just like flat out drop of a wide open touchdown. So it was just a weird game. I think the receiving game got way more just total volume than I thought they would, considering the game script based on Vegas implied odds and totals going in. So I think I'm willing to say Coates is clearly their wide receiver two, obviously, right?
He's not for me a
favorite to get, like, I would suspect the 11 targets that we saw in this game will be his season high, or just darn close. Like, it'd be really hard to imagine a situation where he gets 11 looks again, mostly because I just think they threw so much. So great game by him. It stood to reason that with Revis out, the Jets secondary was a total mess and the passing game was going to be there. We had Brown and Bell pretty much in all the lineups that we threw out there this week, and Roethlisberger on DraftKings. So things worked out there.
I mean, we looked at Coates, though, right?
We did.
Coates was another guy who we had a rather extended conversation about Sunday morning and ultimately went in a different direction. But, you know, Coates coming now 8 targets 2 weeks ago, 11 targets last week. And obviously he's got that explosive potential as well. I mean, the 72-yard touchdown in the first quarter, you know, led to a flurry of disappointed texts, let's say, from you and I after we essentially decided to not adjust his usage to have him in optimal lineups. So I don't know. He's very interesting, and he's still not super expensive. And frankly, most people weren't on him for last week either. So I don't know. 6,400 is not – you're not feeling like you're getting away with anything, like after he was 53 last week, but still an interesting play.
Well, so the reason – okay, so just to back up in terms of our conversation on Coates, the specific conversation we had about Coates was not so much the targets. It was his snaps, right? Like he's not out there for every series. Like,
and he's still not. Even he's, in a big
no,
game.
Right. Like just as a comparison, Antonio Brown had 74 snaps. Coates had 44. So it's like
– we heard it here first, folks. Brown better than Coates. If you're playing in a season-long league, you should
No. I'm more using it as a proxy for their passing game and how many snaps it was, because 44 in a vacuum doesn't mean anything. Like,
that's true. That's pretty terrible. And if he's only going to be out there for – and yeah, he had a huge target share when he was out there, 25% on the snaps when he was out on the field. But yeah, if you're only going to play 4/7 of your team's snaps, you're just probably not worth 6,400 almost no matter what.
Right. And so that's more the issue there. And it still remains the issue. So he needs to be great on that kind of snap count. And he looked great. He was kind of all over the field. But I still have the reservations I had going into week five remain for me for week six, even though that matchup against Miami is looking pretty choice going into this weekend.
He's also then in that same vein, a really good guy to look at for huge explosive breakout potential. Because if the Steelers just decide one week, I mean, we saw this happen in the past with them, with Martavis Bryant, or in the distant past with like Emmanuel Sanders. If they just decide that this is the week he's going to be in there and be featured, then he could, I mean, this was an explosive performance already, but there could be more to come. I would suspect, though, that based on this performance, he'll be overowned going into next week.
Possibly. All right, that's it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com. Head over to the site. Grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which will help you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. Also access to our state-of-the-art player lab that's getting better and better as we get more in trends heading into this NFL season. You can also check out all the free content that we have just to solidify some of the process that we have going into these picks. We'll be back again. Actually, I'll be back again tomorrow talking a little bit of NFL and then a little bit of hockey as we get ready for the NHL season that starts tomorrow. I'll be on with our hockey analyst, Chris Durrell, will get us kind of just a way to start looking at the hockey season if that's is kind of a newbie look for you. And then James and I will be back again on Thursday discussing our cash game plays this week for FanDuel and DraftKings. Buddy, talk to you again Thursday.
You bet. That's DavisFantasySportsRankings.com.
DFSR.com for short. See ya.